I'm Gail Harris in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. It's a tradition that stretches far back in time, but in the days of kings and castles, those who came to curry favor with the powerful weren't called lobbyists. That title came later. And these days, the Center for Lobbyists and others who want to win friends and influence Congress is K Street, an architecturally innocuous stretch of office buildings a few blocks from Capitol Hill. What's happening there now is different from days past when both Democrats and Republicans worked the Hill. Now the GOP is not only in charge of all branches of government, but of K Street, too. So do you think a Republican takeover of the lobbying world affects you? Leaving aside the debate over whether lobbying is an efficient way of getting information or influence peddling at its worst, should the public really worry when only one party is ruling K Street? Or is this mostly politics as usual? We invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-8255. And joining me from Washington, D.C. is Larry Noble, Executive Director at the Center for Responsive Politics there. Welcome, Larry.
Great to be with you, Gail. Thanks.
And Nicholas Confessori, an editor of the Washington Monthly magazine, who turned over this particular rock to examine what's underneath in an extensive article last year. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Gail. How are you?
Good, thanks. Let me start with you, Nick. Tell us about how this works, starting with the Tuesday morning meeting that you describe that was held by Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum every week. Who's there? Put us in the room. What's the agenda? What does this look like?
The people in this room are basically top Senate people in the Senate who are Republicans and a select group of lobbyists on K Street who are really more part of the party than part of K Street. These are strategic lobbyists, as they're called, people who used to be party leaders, members of Congress themselves, and they sit there and they talk about, you know, first of all, what is coming up on the Hill for Republicans and how best they can harness the lobbying and money of K Street to get those things done. And second, are there any jobs coming up available? Are there any people who have great K Street jobs who are leaving their jobs soon? And thus, you know, who should we fill that job with? It's a way of having kind of a jobs bank for Republicans in a very formalized way.
And is this the only meeting of this kind that's happening, or are there others?
Since the GOP took power on the Hill, they have had a regular series of meetings on different days of the weeks with different sectors of Washington. They have a meeting with the kind of conservative interest groups. They have a meeting with these lobbyists, these kind of top-level lobbyists and planners, and they have a meeting with the trade association people on different days, and, you know, it changes around. Basically, they have a well-oiled machine here. These people have been meeting together and working together pretty much every week, every single week for the last 10 or even more years. And so it's basically a machine for legislation, for power, for jobs, for everything.
Mm. And in fact, you describe it as something that's a machine that's built on patronage and contracts and one-party rule. And not to be too cynical here, but it is tempting to say yes. And, you know, what else is new?
Yeah, I don't actually think the Democrats have a moral right to any jobs on K Street. I don't view this as a kind of corruption, except insofar as it produces policies that are designed for the benefit of the party and for the corporation, not for actual citizens and real people. But this is, in some ways, an evolution away from the origins of K Street, which came up in its modern form in the 70s when the modern lobbying industry really came into being. And at that time, the Democrats were the dominant power in Washington. So at that time and up through 94, you had a kind of a 50-50 split in jobs and power and campaign money, with the edge going a bit to Democrats. And what the Republicans are trying to do is say, you know, don't just give us our share, give us all of it. And this is what's really changing. It's an effort to permanently fuse K Street to the Republican Party in a way that locks Democrats sort of out of that game entirely for the future.
Well, Larry Noble, from your perspective, is this any surprise that K Street is becoming solidly Republican?
It's not necessarily a surprise, because Nick said this has been going on for a while. It is somewhat troublesome. I actually remember when I first came to Washington many, many years ago, back in the 70s, there were bipartisan lobbying firms, but there also were a number that were Republican, a number that were Democratic, and it was true of the law firms. You knew which were the Republican firms, which were the Democratic firms. And as Nick said, what happened was they started to get more practical about it, and they realized that they needed to have Democrats and Republicans in these firms, in the lobbying and law firms, and they were trying to be more bipartisan. And you also saw that in the political contributions that they were making. While there were some industries that always leaned in one direction or the other, most industries are rather pragmatic about it. They gave contributions to both Republicans and Democrats. And the change now is that the Republicans, as Nick said, aren't really accepting anymore the idea that you can be bipartisan in your giving, that you can have Republicans and Democrats. And the problem with this is, putting aside, as you said at the beginning, the whole question of lobbyists, the problem with this is that you really have a Congress that is hearing from only one side. You also have a Congress that is making it very clear that not only does it favor one set of policies, it doesn't even want to hear from people who have other ideas. And also, it doesn't even want the industries out there and the trade associations out there hiring people who have these other ideas. So I think we're really seeing some sort of evolution that's not healthy. The question is, will it stay? And if and when the Democrats get back in power, whether they will demand the same thing, or whether we're going to go back to more of an evenly balanced model of K Street.
Well, and from the citizens' perspective, why does it matter for these lobbying shops to have both parties represented?
Well, really what you would hope is it's not just both parties, it's the public represented. But the way the system works right now, the public is represented for the most part through the political parties. And what we have now is, as I said, the parties really only hearing from one side. And when you're talking about a legislator proposing policy, or the administration coming up with policy, they do rely on lobbyists. They do rely on, quote, the experts in the field. And there really are different types of lobbyists. As Nick said, they're the strategic lobbyists. They're also the policy lobbyists. They're also the ones who can write the policy papers, who can actually write the legislation. I mean, they're the ones who, for the most part, know what's in the bills that members of Congress are voting on. If you're only hearing from one side, the public is really cut out of the equation. The public is not getting the benefit of at least two views on the issue, even though in many of these cases there are three, four, and five views on the issue. And what you start seeing is policy that very heavily leans towards industries, towards what a certain business sector wants, as opposed to what may be a more balanced view of the world.
Nick, I wonder if you'd give us some concrete examples here. For example, Clinton's attempt to pass universal health insurance versus the Bush administration's push to reform Medicare. That would seem to be a good case study of how this plays out on Capitol Hill.
Yes, it is. I think what you had in 93 was a classic example of K Street sort of organized on its own behalf and for itself. And you had the Clinton administration sort of bartering with the K Street lobbies to try and peel off as many business interests as possible to support its plan so that it would have a chance of going through. And they, you know, really tried very hard. If you hear critics on the left today, they'll claim that Clinton sold out health care to the corporate lobbyists. So there was a real effort to placate K Street and give certain business interests a hand in writing that bill and making those plans. What you had with Bush in this prescription drug reform is very much on the new model, where the Republican Party sets the rules and tells the lobbyists how it's going to work, and says, here's what you're going to get, here's how we're going to do this. The party comes first and you guys come second. And they managed to really pass this thing pretty quickly over lots of objections, even within their own party caucus, but also on K Street, all kinds of different interests. For instance, the drug lobby at first wasn't too hot on what was in the original versions of the bill, and yet, even before the Bush administration had said exactly what the bill was going to look like, the drug industry had already ponied up millions of dollars in ad money to support Republican candidates who voted for whatever the bill was going to be in the end. So it was really an example, as you say, of the new model of how K Street is supposed to function under Bush and the GOP.
And Larry, how do you see Congress responding to this? I mean, are they basically saying, okay, fine, we can count votes just as well as you can. Fine, you tell us what to do and we'll do it.
Yeah, to a certain extent, that's what they're doing. And it goes both ways. I mean, Republicans in Congress can now say to K Street, listen, this is the agenda. This is what we want to push. But at the same time, K Street is saying, well, fine, we're at the table here. This is what we want. The Republicans in Congress, at least most of them, like this, frankly. They're in the driver's seat right now. They're getting what they want. They're flexing their muscles. Now, I have to say, there are some Republicans in Congress who are nervous about this because they feel that the pendulum will swing back, that Democrats may very well get back in power, and And that they could really lose out in that situation. There's some who, frankly, just don't like it because it goes away from the old model of how legislation used to be passed, about how lobbyists used to work. But, you know, it's that old problem that this is the game they won with. This is what's kept them in office for a while. They're rewarding their friends, and their friends are rewarding them. And they're not really that eager to change it right now. They're going to keep going. In fact, one of the things that we're starting to hear, and I'm not sure yet, you know, if these rumors are true, is that it's some of the pressure from Congress is increasing, in the sense that there was this idea going around for a while, and it's been documented that the Republicans on the Hill made it very clear to certain industry trade associations that they did not want Democrats hired to head up the industry associations. Now, in some cases, industry associations, and one of the more infamous ones is Electronic Industries Association, bucked what Congress said and still hired a Democrat. Now, there was a story recently that with Daschle being voted out, that some of his staff, or at least one of his staff members, is going to have trouble getting a job in one of these lobbying firms because he's a Democrat. And so, if this is true, what we're seeing is it's moving away from just the top people. And the word is going out on the street that if you work for Democrats, you're going to be in trouble. And again, that's a very unhealthy situation. And it really shows, I think, what happens when one party is in power and one party feels that there's really not much that can be done if you don't like this.
Well, and Nick, with this kind of power shift happening apparently quietly off to one side, largely unnoticed, do you think that means the Republicans are unlikely ever to fall out of power?
You know, the wheel always turns in politics. You know, certainly the gerrymandering of the House and the kind of automatic gerrymandering of the Senate in favor of rural states, you know, it makes the odds long for Democrats to retake the Hill in the next 10 years, I think, absent a real kind of anti-incumbent sort of angry wave of voters. But I think it's important to understand here that what they are trying to do with K Street is build a political machine that can exist even when they're not in power. It's a long-term effort, because if you look at how Washington works with kind of jobs and with careers, you know, K Street is where you go after you put in your time on the Hill to go and make some money and feed your family and buy a nice house in the suburbs. And if you can't go to K Street, you're going to leave Washington and go work, you know, for some corporation or a law firm in New York or Chicago or Los Angeles or wherever. So in part, this is a way where if they control all the plum jobs on K Street, the ones that make, you know, more than a cabinet secretary makes, if they control those jobs, they can keep their talented people in Washington, in the system, and pull them out for campaign work or for strategy work or for whatever down the line. And the Democrats will not have a place to put their people. So all these great Clinton administration, you know, experts and policy people and people who know how to run the government and exercise power are going to find, and also Daschle's people and people on the Hill are going to find that they don't have anywhere to go for that part of the career path. So they'll leave Washington and not be available for the game for Democrats.
All right, as well as the point that government is supposed to be about compromise. We're going to pick up on that point when we come back after a break. We're talking this hour about the politicization of the world of lobbying. Do you think partisanship has gone too far if entry to the political process means pledging loyalty to the winning team alone? 1-800-423-8255 is the number to call to join the conversation. I'm Gail Harris in for Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. I'm Gail Harris in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. We're talking this hour about the implications of one-party rule in Washington. My guests are Nick Confessori, editor of the Washington Monthly Magazine, also Larry Noble, executive director of the Center for Responsive Politics in Washington, and now joining us, Republican pollster Whit Ayers. He is president of Ayers McHenry & Associates, Inc., a national public opinion and public affairs research firm in Alexandria, Virginia. Welcome, Whit.
Hello, Gail. Good to be with you.
Well, we're delighted you can join us, and I do feel as if I need to give you an opportunity to defend the role of lobbying. We were kind of beaten up on you in the first section. Why do you think lobbyists are a necessary part of the system?
Well, I don't know that it's my role to defend the role of lobbying, but I do think it may be my role to provide a little perspective on this discussion. After listening to the first part of the show, I can see why so many of my Democratic friends need therapy here, this sort of hand-wringing that, oh, no, the Republicans are going to control everything and the Democrats are out in the wilderness forever and ever, doesn't bear any resemblance to the reality that I see in Washington. Let's go back in history for a little bit. For more than half a century, the Democrats had a stranglehold on Congress, and lobbying firms are nothing if not pragmatic. There was, in fact, no resemblance of a 50-50 split on K Street. Most of the major lobbying firms were dominated by Democrats, and they were dominated by Democrats for a very good reason. Democrats controlled the House and the Senate for so much of the 20th century. Even the business organizations usually had Democrats at the head of them. All that's happened since 1994 is that these major lobbying firms and law firms have decided that maybe we need to get some Republican representation in here too. And so there was a scramble after 1994 when the Republicans took over to get some more Republican representatives in these major firms so that they could speak to the Republicans who were, for the first time in half a century, making some of the laws. And I think all you're seeing now is a balancing of the scales that occurred with very unbalanced scales throughout much of the 20th century. So I don't see this as at all one side controlling everything, one side promoting their agenda at the expense of the other side. I see it more as a righting of the scales after a historical imbalance for many years.
Well, are you more involved in legislation today than you were, say, 5 or 10 years ago?
After 1994, I noticed a marked increase in interest in getting our firm's involvement with policy research that would affect Congress. We were frequently brought in with a Democratic counterpart so that there would be more of a bipartisan view presented to Congress. And that's continued to be the case. We frequently work with our Democratic polling counterparts when we're conducting surveys for lobbying organizations or for law firms. And many of the associations, the trade associations we work with, are still run by Democrats and have Democrats as presidents of their firms. So there has not been this wholesale shift to Republicans that I heard in the first part of this show. There is more of a balance so that you have some people who can speak to Republicans and some people who can speak to Democrats.
And you have, I take it, Democratic staffers at your firm?
We don't have Democratic staffers at our firm. We are a Republican-oriented firm. But what I'm saying is that when we work for associations, we're frequently paired with a Democratic Democratic polling firm that has all Democratic staffers.
How do you go about winning friends and influencing people on Capitol Hill? I mean, it's not like the old days where you were just kind of, or these firms were just sort of wining and dining people, or at least that was the popular perception. What is your role in terms of giving them information that you think they need to have?
Well, we are not a lobbying firm, Gail. We are a public opinion research firm, and that's a different kettle of fish. So when we go up to Capitol Hill, it is generally to talk to clients about running their campaigns or working with them in their campaigns, or talking about some policy that we may have a particular area of expertise in. But the way most lobbying firms work is information sharing. There's this image that there are these cloak and dagger people behind the scenes pulling the strings of legislators. It just doesn't work that way. Most of the time, what a lobbyist does is share information about how a particular piece of legislation would affect them, would affect their industry, would affect their region. And most lobbyists jealously guard the credibility of that information, because if they're found to be wrong once, then the credibility of anything they say to a lawmaker goes out the window. So most of the time, what they're doing is sharing information or a perspective about the consequences of legislation on them or their industry.
Whit, stay with us for a minute. I want to bring Larry back into the conversation. It sounds as if what Whit is saying is that there has always been a balance of Democratic perspectives and Republican perspectives. Anything wrong with that? Or you're saying that this is different now.
Right. I do think it is different. I mean, I agree with Whit to a certain extent that obviously when what we've always seen is that when the Democrats were in control, yes, there was definitely a leaning towards the Democrats. We saw this in political contributions. We saw this in lobbying. But what we also saw during the 80s was this real effort on the part of the lobbying firms and the companies and industries to balance the political contributions to get Republicans and Democrats. I think what people are really focusing on, and I guess there may be some question about how effective it is the K Street Project, is this idea now, which we did not see previously, that you're going to be in trouble if, in fact, you hire a Democrat, that don't expect to get a seat at the table if you're giving money to the Democrats. And this is the message that is going out. And people like Rover Norquist are being very clear about it, that they think it's no longer enough that you contribute to the Republicans, but you better not be contributing to the Democrats. Now, it is also true that Democratic lobbying firms are still out there. Democratic lobbyists are still working. We still have a lot of Democrats in the House and a lot of Democrats in the Senate. And so they still clearly have a role to play. But the message that's going out there is a new message. This has been a message that's been really developing over the last, I guess maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 years now. The Republicans are very clear about what they want. They want to make sure that their Democrats do not have leadership positions in these trade associations. Again, the trade associations are not always following the script in that way, but the message is out there.
1-800.
There may be a few people, Gail, there may be a few people who are saying things like that, but the most important word used in the first part of your program was pragmatic. These lobbying firms want to get things accomplished on Capitol Hill. There will always be substantial representation from the Democratic Party on Capitol Hill, and those people need to be talked to, and those people's votes need to be gained if legislation is going to succeed. So I think there will always be a pragmatic element on K Street that says we need to speak to both members of both parties.
1-800-423-8255 is our number if you'd like to speak with us. We're going to go to Raleigh, North Carolina, first of all, and hear from David. Hi, David. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Gail. I'm having a little difficulty here understanding something. It's been my assumption over the years that government exists to govern in the interests of the entire nation. And I'm wondering, somebody said a moment ago, let's go back in history a little bit. Let's do go back in history a little bit. I wonder how this is different from Tammany Hall.
In terms of Tammany Hall's influence and basically running?
In terms of Tammany Hall's control of distribution of jobs and other spoils. Mm-hmm. In 1800s New York City.
Well, Larry, let me put that one to you. I'm not sure if you're also a student of history, but it is an interesting point in that before we had the civil service system, it was party politics. That's how you got a job. That's how the Democrats gained power, by patronage.
And that's true. And I don't know many people who think Tammany Hall was a good thing. So I'm not sure that's the model that we want to go back to, because we then did have laws passed to try to limit that. But the reality still is, in Washington, when a Republican administration comes into power, Republicans will get jobs. When a Democratic administration comes into power, Democrats will get jobs. And we're going to see a lot of the big fundraisers for Bush and Congress get jobs in the administration. And in a sense, that's almost a different issue. What we're talking here about is the question of whether or not they're going to affect the jobs outside groups have, whether they're going to affect the voices that petition them. And that's really in a sense a different problem. I think everybody agrees that Tammany Hall, that type of patronage was wrong. It goes on. It's a certain part of the political process you can't do anything about. You can limit it. But here what we're talking about is going outside and, in effect, at least threatening, whether they're doing it or not, threatening to punish organizations that are either giving support to Democrats or are hiring people who are Democrats. And I think that is something different, because really what you're doing there is you're closing off access to different points of views. But, again, Whit is right. I mean, look, the reality of it is these industries can't just totally foreclose hiring Democrats. They have to deal with members of the Democratic Party on the Hill. There's legislation that's going to need support from Democrats. And again, they have to think about what's happening in the future. But we're really talking about a trend and a policy that is somewhat different than what we've seen before.
We want to hear from John now, who's on the line from Amherst, New York. Hello, John. Welcome.
Hi, folks. I'd like to preface anything I say by saying that I trust a business well over a government, because a business does have repercussions if they do something wrong. It seems like we've congratulated people in government who have just made our lives miserable. And I'm not necessarily concerned that a guy who's going, a lobbyist, who is looking out for business interest, is not looking out for the people, because these are the people who actually hire people who put food on the table of other people. Now, my original intent to call was to just say, it just seems that Democrats just, they don't know how to lose. Now they want to change the rules and everything like that. When my side was out of power, we said, all right, we're going to roll up our sleeves and we're going to figure out a way to get back in good graces with the American people, and we did that. Now we want to change rules because it's not the normal order, according to the people on the left. But this is just a fair and square fight. I think that anyone who participates in this $10-plus trillion economy has a right to petition the government to look out for its interest. That's just written in the Constitution.
Okay, John, I think we got it. Let me put that question to Whit. I mean, is this just a matter of, hey, fair's fair, the spoils go to the victor?
That implies that the victor determines all of these spoils. And as Larry was saying, these lobbying firms are always going to need to talk to both sides, and they're ultimately going to be the ones who determine who gets hired or not. But I think John's right, your caller's right, in the sense that a lot of this is just having the tables turned after a half a century of Democratic control, and there's a period of adjustment going on, sometimes more successfully than others on the left.
Larry, your group has found that 10 years ago, political donations were split pretty much evenly, and today the GOP holds a 2-to-1 advantage in corporate money. What do you think that means in terms of policy?
Again, I think that means that members of Congress are going to be, Republican members of Congress are going to be listening to their donors. They're going to be listening to the industry. They're going to have a seat at the table. You know, I'm not against lobbying. I have to say, I think, you know, lobbying, there's an honorable place for lobbying. Life has become too complicated. You can't expect members of Congress to understand everything. They have to hear from a lot of different people. And really, in their purest form, what a lobbyist does is present the interests of the group they're representing. And what you would hope, though, is that members of Congress and their limited time would listen to a variety of different sources and would give at least the weight, the substantive weight that the source deserves. The problem what we have now, especially with the political contribution shifting the way they are, is that they're really only giving one side a seat at the table. And that they're really only listening to one side. Look, I agree that the Democrats, when they were in power, obviously favored Democratic-leaning industries, favored the labor unions. That's clear. But the question is this really having an effect on the type of advice, the type of policy advice these members are getting and what they're willing to do? You know, what we've seen in tracking the contributions is you're absolutely right, Gail. Over what we always used to say is most industries are very pragmatic. They were either sitting on the fence or they lean Democratic or lean Republican, depending on who was in power. But what we're seeing now, if you look at the top 20 industries giving, we're seeing many more of them going strongly Republican. And that's something new. So there's still some pragmatism there, but they are leaning much more strongly Republican. And if that trend continues, since money does clearly have an influence on election, it clearly then helps elect more Republicans. And obviously that's the Republicans' goal. I'm not saying the Democrats may not try the same thing if they get back in power. But that's the world we're looking at now. And the question is this going to be really an imbalanced world? Are we really moving towards an area where legislation is going to be based on hearing from only one side, only one industry, only one group? And if so, I think that then is really a problem for the American public.
Nick, I want to bring you back into the conversation. This is something that you've written about as well, and I'm reminded of the saying about how Democrats always form their firing squads in a circle. How is it that you think the Republicans have been able to both demand and get pretty much total loyalty, and that's certainly been more problematic for lobbyists for Democrats?
Well, the ability of Democrats to sort of win a portion or majority of jobs and money off K Street in the 80s was in proportion to their willingness to give business what it wanted. And I think businesses gave to Democrats because they had to and to Republicans because they wanted to, for the most part, not entirely. Cause, you know, I don't think all business issues are kind of right-left or break that cleanly. But now that the Republicans are in power, this is what they believe. They believe no business has any business doing business with the Democrat, that the Democrats are fundamentally an anti-business party and a pro, So not a group that any respectable business should work with. I remember talking to some of these guys, you know, if there's any group of people that Tom DeLay, Newt Gingrich hated the most, it was Fortune 500 CEOs, these quisling, moderate, pragmatic businessmen who gave money to both sides so they could play both sides. And what the new social contract, if you will, on K Street is, we want you to give us all of your money and all of your jobs and not deal with those guys at all. In return, we'll give you everything you want according to our schedule in a way that makes sense for our party. But we want you to shut those guys out completely. And since money has no courage, increasingly these interests are inclined to say, well, heck, these guys are going to control Congress for 10 years. They have the White House. We should probably play ball. So, yeah, we've seen a swing back so that Republicans get more of the money. But, you know, ask Tom DeLay. He says, I want, you know, if labor gives 9-1 to Democrats, I want all of business to give 9-1 to Republicans. That's their goal. That's where we're going with this.
And I'm curious also how this plays out in terms of corporations. Clear Channel Communications, for example, had its station sponsor pro-war rallies during the Iraq War, also banned the Dixie Chicks from its playlist. But, you know, was that because that's the way the corporate heads felt? Or was this sort of part of a grander strategy?
It's hard to know what to make of that, really, actually, because in my reporting on this, I, you know, sort of learned that this kind of thing where a party tries to enlist the employees of a business to try and help pass something is not that rare. And Democrats have done it, too. Clinton did it on certain policies where it made sense for all sides concerned. I do think there's this trend towards corporatism, if you will, this kind of merger of the political and corporate leadership in Washington. And, you know, if Clear Channel wants to endanger its customer base by taking a side, I mean, they can do that. Usually what stops businesses from doing too much of this is at the end of the day, half the country is Republican, half of it is Democrat, more or less. And so, you know, if you take sides and it just beats too much, you lose some business.
All right. Hold the thought. We'll be back after a break to talk more about the Republican campaign to place party members in Washington's top lobbying jobs. Do you think politics is or should be a winner-takes-all game? How do you think it will affect legislation? The number to call is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Gail Harrison for Dick Gordon, and you're listening to The Connection. I'm Gail Harris in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. And this hour, we're talking about the implications of one-party rule on the political lobbying process. The number to call to join our conversation is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And right now, I want to welcome Congressman Steny Hoyer into the conversation. He's a Democrat from Maryland and House Minority Whip. Welcome, Congressman. Glad you could join us.
Thank you, Gail. Glad to be with you.
I know you've been listening for the last few minutes. I'm interested in hearing your perspective. I mean, you are right on the front lines of this. What are you seeing?
Well, what we're seeing is an attempt by the Republicans over the last 10 years, this is not a new phenomenon, to shut out alternative views altogether. I don't think the American public feel that's healthy. And it's manifested itself, frankly, in some very, very bad behavior bordering on, and some is going to be, I think, found to be criminal behavior. We have examples where interest like tribal Indians, for instance, probably the biggest issue currently being looked at by the Congress, where two Republican lobbyists, one of whom was a Tom DeLay staffer, essentially bilked Indian tribes for $42 million on the assertion that they had, in effect, total control over whether those Indian tribes were going to be able to pursue casino gambling or not pursue casino gambling. In fact, they took from both sides. Like one of them, Michael Scanlon, called to testify before Congress and essentially refused to testify. The other under intense investigation, Jack Abramoff.
Do you see an attempt for Democrats being purged from jobs? I mean, what kinds of stories are you hearing?
Gail, I think that clearly the effort has been to both purge, for instance, in the investment company institute, there was an effort to have a Democratic lobbyist fired. The industry did not bow to that, but they certainly compromised their position. In the Electronic Industry Association, an extraordinarily capable member, a very moderate, one would say conservative Democrat, Dave McCurdy, Mr. DeLay weighed in and almost demanded that they not hire him. Again, they hired him. But there are numerous examples around this town where companies have gone to exclusively hiring Republican lobbyists on the expectations that the trade-off would be, as one of your previous speakers said, that they would get whatever they wanted. I think the American public believe that's a very dangerous phenomenon. And I want to say that the defense of everybody does it, somewhat alluded to by your previous speakers, that Democrats did this. Democrats, in my opinion, did not do this. What Democrats did do was to certainly recommend Democrats. But I don't know of instances, and certainly don't know of any personally, and I've been here for almost a quarter of a century, where Democrats weighed in and said, you either needed to fire somebody who was Republican. I happen to work very closely with a number of Republican lobbyists for whom I have great respect, or to not hire somebody because of their party affiliation, which I think is a very substantive difference. Recommending somebody because you think they're good, and yes, they're Democrats, and you're dealing with a Democratic Congress or you're dealing with Democratic members. But I think the business community is aware of the fact that a lot of their issues are not simply Republican or Democratic issues. Trade is a perfect example. Trade doesn't pass on a partisan basis. High-tech issues in the high-tech community are usually bipartisan. Communications issues, bipartisan coalitions, even tax bills. The Business Roundtable dealing with deficits, which they were very animated about during the 90s. Are all issues in which they work with both parties. I think business is better off working with both parties. I think the American people are better off if both parties are participating in the process and, frankly, watching one another. That's the checks and balances of the parties. It's not the checks and balances of the legislative, judicial, and executive departments, but there is that, that dynamic that is, I think, important to the American public, that there is opposition relevance and opposition participation in decision-making so that that decision-making is honest and in the best interest of the American public.
Well, Congressman, thank you so much for joining us.
You bet. Thanks a lot.
Congressman Steny Hoyer, Democrat from Maryland and House Minority Whip. Let's go back to our phone lines now to Lincoln, Massachusetts first. Sam's on the line. Hi.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I think one of the callers a few calls back got it absolutely right, that you really have to frame this whole discussion in terms of whether you pick the evil of business or the evil of government. And it's been amazing to me listening to it how many times all we've been talking about here is business. And I guess my observation is I think the Republican Party had a long-term strategy, and I want the guests to comment on this. I'm about 50 years old, so I would say it happened somewhere around the time that Goldwater got roundly defeated. And their strategy was to create all these opinion institutes like Cato and Heritage Fund, the Enterprise and Institute, and to create a power base of ideas. And I think the big idea the Republican Party or these groups has is they want to really take apart the welfare state. Like I said, I'm 50. My father grew up on the heels of the welfare state. By that I mean Social Security, unemployment insurance, health insurance, the GI Bill. And I think the agenda that we're talking about is taking that whole thing apart, because I think the power brokers and the people, the heads of business and the wealthy have always hated that. And I think that's what they're up to, and I think it's important to frame this discussion in terms of business versus government and also big business versus the interests of the majority of people, which I think the wealthy have always been afraid of, that democracy might break out. And how do you avoid democracy in a democratic country?
Sam, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate your joining us. Larry, what about that point? And is this something that Democrats would do if they could do it as well as the Republicans are?
Well, again, as Congressman Hoyer said, when the Democrats were in power, yes, they did recommend Democrats for jobs, and they do offer the seats at the table to the more Democratic groups. Obviously, labor has a lot of influence with the Democrats. There are other industries that have a lot of influence with the Democrats. As we said before, though, one of the differences here, and Congressman Hoyer said it also, is one of the differences here is the attempt to, in essence, blackball Democrats when Republicans are in power. And I wasn't really aware of, and maybe it went on, but I'm not really aware of situations when the Democrats were in power where they were punishing groups or threatening to punish groups for hiring Republicans. Now, in terms of what Sam had to say, you know, it's interesting when you frame it in terms of the evil of business versus the evil of government. I think what we're talking about here is business and government working together. And the problem is what happens with government when it only really listens to one side. And one of the dangers here is that the individual interests, the interests of the average voter, is not listened to when in fact what the policymakers, what the legislators are listening to are the interests of certain sectors, certain business sectors, and that's what they're major concern about. So I don't think you can neatly divide this into business versus government. What we're seeing here now is business and government as a partnership. And in fact, that's the way Congress is trying to sell it. That's the way the Republicans in the administration are trying to sell it.
But if, in fact, some of these functions that used to be taken care of by government, everything from running prisons and hospitals and whatever, are now being moved to the private sector, you know, if Social Security will become more privatized, if other aspects of government become more privatized, do we as voters lose something?
Well, those are very complicated debates, and it is clear that the Republican agenda is to try to privatize as much of this as possible. It's no coincidence. It's also the business agenda. They want to privatize as much of what the government has been doing as possible because they benefit from it. The real problem is in this debate: is Congress going to listen to anybody else but the industry? Are they going to listen to others other than investment firms who really stand to benefit if we privatize Social Security or privatize part of Social Security? Are they only listening to the pharmaceutical industry when you talk about prescription drug benefits? That's really the problem here, is that in complicated debates, there's a tendency to only to listen to one side and only to have one side at the table. We saw it when this administration came in. And, you know, we're talking about this administration because it's been in power for a while. In the energy field, when the administration came in, one of the first things they did is they had Vice President Cheney sit down with basically the energy industry and come up with the nation's energy policy. Now, nobody is suggesting that the energy industry should not have some input. Obviously, they have an interest in this. They have a certain expertise. But the problem was others weren't listened to because they were not seen as supporting the administration. And I think that if that is repeated with Social Security, with pharmaceutical interests, then I think we do have a problem because you're only getting one side of the debate, and it is business and government working together, in effect, to benefit business.
To Virginia Beach, Virginia now. We want to hear from Jim. Hi, Jim, and welcome.
Good morning. The problem with having one party being in charge of everything is a new group of people comes in every 4 years, and they try to change the whole country over to their vision. And while they're doing that, they screen the ideas of everybody else out. When the Republicans take power or the Democrats take power, there still should be a mechanism for the other party to have a really good say-so in what's going on, because what happens is the Republicans are screening out all the ideas that the Democrats have. And there may be some good ideas in the Democratic bag of tricks. I would like to see proportional power sharing within the government to also include third parties in this country. We have a rising Green Party, Constitution Party, different independents. And those people, they may have fantastic ideas, but they have no way to get their ideas out for the public to take a look at. So proportional power sharing to include Democrats, Greens, what have you, I think that's the way we need to go. I mean, this country is going down the tubes with us being on this Democratic-Republican seesaw every 4 years.
Jim, thanks for the call. And let me put that question to Whit. And also, is there a danger here for the Republicans? Is it short-sighted? Because eventually the pendulum always swings back the other way.
It's amazing, Gail. I don't recall any of these discussions back in the 60s or 70s or 80s about concern and hand-wringing that the Republican ideas are being shut out and the Republican ideas aren't being listened to. This just seems to be a relatively new phenomenon here. Of course, Republican ideas aren't being shut out, or excuse me, Democratic ideas aren't being shut out, and Democrats are not being shut out of the process. They've still got 45 seats in the Senate, and they've got a filibuster to work with. This is all Democratic paranoia about what might happen or what could happen rather than what has happened. We haven't had a single example mentioned here on this program of any Democrat being denied a job or being fired from a job or being purged from a job. We've had a few Republicans who said they'd like to do that, and then the response is always, but the industry did not bow to that pressure, or the association hired the person anyway. This is so much paranoia. It's not the way the system works. This system is incredibly open. It's incredibly open to a lot of different ideas, and you're going to have lots of very noisy people in making sure that their ideas are listened to in the congressional process, even though the Republicans control both houses.
Nick, I want to give you the last word here from your perch at the Washington Monthly magazine. What can Democrats who are upset about this do about it, if anything, other than scream? And is this much ado about nothing? Is Whit right? We wouldn't be complaining if the shoe were on the other foot.
I mean, you know, I have no brief here for the Democrats or the Republicans, and I think Whit is right that when the Democrats were in power, they weren't worrying too much about how to make sure they were getting all the good Republican ideas. If Democrats want to change this, they have to do one thing. They have to win, and win a lot. And change the balance of power. I do think that we are seeing, you know, if you talk to any Democrat on the Hill, it's all very technical. I don't want to get, you know, too much into it, but you do see this effort to run the House like a parliament, to shut out the opposing party completely. This is a Republican Party in Congress that takes a pride in passing bills by as narrow a margin as possible, even when small compromises would bring in a larger majority, a larger number of votes. They want to make the Democrats totally irrelevant to the policymaking process. And this comes back to K Street. If Democrats are irrelevant to the policymaking process, there's no reason to give them any money or hire them for any jobs. And that's the goal. I don't know if we'll get there, but that's the goal.
Well, we'll have to leave it there for now, and we'll stay tuned as you will. I want to say thanks to my guests, Larry Noble, Executive Director at the Center for Responsive Politics in Washington. Thanks, Larry.
Thank you.
To Nick Confessori, editor of the Washington Monthly magazine. Nick, thank you to you.
Thank you.
And earlier we spoke with Republican pollster Whit Ayers. Whit, if you're still there, thanks.
Thank you, Gail.
And Democratic Congressman Steny Hoyer, the House Minority Whip. The Connection is produced by Jennifer Ehrlich, Catherine Fenollosa, Jen Mattson, Virginia Prescott, Christina Russo, Doug Shugarts, and Kevin Sullivan. I'm Gail Harrison for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.